Hello and welcome to the Grove Church Podcast. I'm Charlie Lofton, the lead pastor there, and we are so glad that you're joining us. Whether you are a member and you're just catching up on a sermon that you missed, or you're someone who's brand new, we are really glad that you are joining us. And if you are new in some way, and I know that a lot of people will do that, will listen to sermons first before they visit, I want you to know that we would love to meet you at any point. You can join us live in our services on Sunday 9 and 10:30 or our streaming service at 10:30. Either way, we would love to be able to get to know you. And regardless of why you are here listening to this sermon today, thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Well, hey, good morning. I'm Mark, and I am, I think my mind's almost caught up with my body. So the place that we were just a few days ago, it's 9 p.m. right now. So yeah, I was up at about 3 this morning, so I'm finishing my day. So I'm doing all right. This trip that I got to take here last week, last couple weeks, I took my 9-year-old Jack with me, and that was a really awesome experience. If you've been tracking with me at all, we went and supported this group in Thailand there at the end of the year last year, November 1st of December. And his twin sister, Darcy, went with us, and she loves watching kiddos, and so she went, and she did childcare during these meetings. And when we did that, I was like, all right, Jack, I've got this trip coming up in March, and I want you to go with me, and your superpower, her superpower is watching the kiddos, your superpower is making people laugh, so just get ready, and if you've been around him, he will at least attempt to make you laugh. And it was really interesting, for one, just because it's worth sharing, and he's not in here. Sometimes he's in here and he's not today. For the longest, twins are just interesting to me, so for the longest, he didn't really talk. He just didn't really want to walk. None of the things. He just let his sister tie his shoes, like all the things. She just fills all the space, and he just is kind of there. And you remove her from the equation, and boy, he was out of control. I just didn't know he had that much personality. He was big as life and seemed to manage all the things pretty well. It's interesting because for them, our family, their two older brothers, who are now 21 and 18, we lived in this place in South Asia for 3 years, from 2007 to 2010. And so we've got all these experiences, and we've got these pictures, and I go often, and so they hear me talking about it, but they haven't personally experienced it. And so it was pretty cool because this trip in particular, we went back and did some of the things, and we're around some of the areas that he's heard stories about. And one of those things, there's this place way up in the mountains, a really beautiful place where we would go, and there's a school there where we would learn language, do a little bit more language intensive. And it is, it's a 5-hour passenger train ride up in the mountains, and then you get in a taxi, and there's these little windy little roads that you get up there to where the school is. And then up there, it's basically you're walking everywhere, and it's just real steep little trails and things. And at the top of that hill, there's this place where there are 4 stores. And in the local language, that's called Char Dukan. And the 4 stores basically sell the same thing, which is something that I always think is kind of funny. Like, I mean, how do you compete when there's... Anyway, it's an interesting little setup. And one of them has chocolate pancakes. Now, I know that's probably not what you expected me to say. There's a lot of really good food that's very... But this place does a pancake like I can't even explain to you. I'm not even sure if it's like if you would call it a pancake. It's like folding over the side of your plate, and it's about that thick. I'm sure they use like maybe some cake batter or something, because it's not just your normal pancake. It's chocolate, and it's got chocolate syrup, and it's got chocolate chips. And one of the things I was really excited about was to get back to this place. I knew we were going to be nearby and have this chocolate pancake. The people there are so welcoming and so nice, and this pancake's incredible. The one sad thing about it, Jack doesn't eat chocolate. So I was trying to introduce him to this beautiful thing, and because he doesn't like chocolate, he just kind of didn't really appreciate it. We got him a banana pancake, and now I found out all he wants is banana pancake. So he did at least get to experience it a little bit. But I promise you that that place, I'm not just pulling your leg. Like, that place actually exists. Sometimes I wonder when I tell stories, like I'll talk to somebody later, are you just making that story up? I promise you, I could take you there right now. Now I've got other witnesses. You could ask Jack, he's experienced it. We even got some pictures while we were up there, so I could say, hey, this is what this place looks like. And I can introduce you to this place and tell you that it's there, that it exists, and that the people there are pleasant and would invite you in and take care of you well. But it's still going to be my experience. And at some point, for you to experience it, you would have to have the belief that it's there and that it's so incredible that it is worth the 2-hour flight to the 2-hour flight to the 16-hour flight to the 5-hour train ride to the, you know, to get to that place and enjoy that pancake. Now, I'm not saying you should do that because it's not that good, but it's pretty close. But in the same way, this question that we're going to be dealing with this morning is, I mean, is God even real? Does he exist? And does he care? Does he want to be known and want to be involved in what's going on and in your life? And I feel, as I've prepared for this morning and thought about this for several weeks now, that a bit like that. Like, I can tell you how incredible it is. I can tell you the experiences that I've had, the reasons why, I love him so much and want to know him so badly. But that would be my experience. And I think a critical part of this is just the invitation. So I'll kind of start with the end in mind here, the invitation to for you to believe it. And then what does it mean if you actually believe that? What actions, what perspective is an automatic knee-jerk to the belief that there is a real God and that he wants to be in relationship with you? Because those implications are pretty massive. And if I go back in my journey a little bit, it was fall of 1997. Terry and I had just gotten married that summer. The next semester of my junior year had started. We were in a full swing of football practice and games. And in a kind of a strange, peculiar set of events, this guy gets my name and calls me up and asks me to go grab some Chinese food. And in this town that we were in, there was no good Chinese food. But he was buying, and I was a college student that was just married, and so I was going to let him buy my lunch. Especially, he was talking about some Jesus stuff and some Bible studies. And, you know, I had been to church enough that I was willing to go let him buy my Chinese food and talk about Jesus for a little bit. And so we get there, and I'll just say, God has really used this guy. Now he lives in Northwest Arkansas, and we still meet together. He has continually used him. And as I try to process, what is it that was different in this encounter and the way that this guy had approached truths about God than anybody before that? Because I had grown up around church. My parents' faith is vibrant. And so when I meet this guy, it's not that I didn't know things. And it's not that he necessarily taught me any new information that I didn't know, maybe little bits, but, you know, I had pretty much gotten the big picture. But what I found out was much of that was a hand-me-down kind of faith. I had it, but I hadn't really thought that deeply about it, been that thoughtful about it. And most of these interactions with this guy, as we were looking at passages or we were talking about different things, passages of Scripture or talking about different things, he brought me to a decision point. If this is true, then this is the automatic reaction to that truth. If there is a God that exists, and he created everything, he created you, then the reaction to that is to worship him big, right? And to give him the worship that he deserves. It affects my things that I do, the things that I don't do. I mean, if that is true, what pursuit could be greater than to pursue to know that living God? If eternity is real, if it really isn't just we live and we die and we go back into the ground, and if there is this everlasting life, that also had massive impacts on my moments, my days, my minutes right now. If this Bible really does contain answers and truth, then my pursuit of knowing it, of memorizing it, of meditating on it, it becomes not just a kind of side hobby. It becomes a core pursuit for me. And so it just felt like every time I get around this guy, even today, it's like these decision points. Instead of being on the roundabout and just continuing to drive in a circle, you know, this is something I've noticed that's happened a lot in Northwest Arkansas now. You know, we're getting these roundabouts everywhere. In fact, somebody the other day showed me a picture of a car that was trying to take it and was going too fast and flipped and ended up in the ditch. And I don't know if you've noticed this, but people don't know how to do roundabouts. They don't. I think we're getting better at it, if I'm judging us as a whole. Now that they're everywhere, people tend to do better at it. When we were living overseas, roundabouts were a commonplace, and big, huge roundabouts, too. I'm talking there would be like 8 or 9 different offshoots from this big roundabout. And Terry and I were laughing about this last night. On this trip, I was with this younger person who was living there, and he just finally, it's like it hit him. He's like, man, because we're driving and we're using Google Maps, and he says, man, when you guys lived here, you didn't have a smartphone, did you? And I said, man, actually, we didn't. And he's like, well, how did you navigate driving around this mega city with all the roads and all the things? I was like, man, we had a paper map. And let me explain what it looked like. It was called an Iker, and it was about this thick, and it was the whole city, but then there would be a page that was like, you know, zoomed in on one part of the city, these few streets right here. And Terry would sit in the passenger seat, and she would try to work the book and figure out where we were going. And I would drive, and it became commonplace that the boys in the back seat would say, oh, Daddy, another U-turn, Dad. Because we would make so many U-turns, and I love roundabouts because we could just get on a roundabout and just keep on circling. And we could look at the book and try to figure out which one of these offshoots we were going to take. And we could be on that roundabout. Y'all know, no joke. I mean, there were some times we rode roundabout a long time. But that was okay because we weren't making a mistake, you know. We weren't going the wrong way. We were just hitting pause while we tried to make the right decision. And, you know, I feel like on some of these things that are just true and people of faith, me, sometimes we get in this place that we're just on the roundabout. You know, we don't want to commit too much and make some sort of wrong decision. We don't want to think that deeply about the difference between what is true and what is false. And so sometimes we can just kind of get on the roundabout and ride it. And that's when I met this guy. I think that's exactly where I was. On most of the things of faith, I was just on the roundabout, kind of holding my ticket to heaven and waiting it out. And then really making most of my decisions just based on what felt good to me or what made sense to me. And he just wasn't going to put up with it. He brought me to these decisive moments where I had to decide whether I believe this stuff reels or not. And, you know, Proverbs says this. It says, chapter 23, verse 23. Buy truth and don't sell it. Buy wisdom, instruction, and understanding. Buy truth and don't sell it. When you find truth, you hold on to it with everything that you've got. You look for it, you search for it, and when you find that something is true, you respond to that with a death grip. And you know, one of the things, just as an example, one of the things that I found true is that if this good news that we have, the gospel, if there really is a creator God and he really does want to know us, and this thing that we're celebrating in a few weeks, that man, he sent his son, God in the flesh, the image of the invisible God, he displayed the character and the nature of God before us, and he gave up his life, and then he was resurrected from the dead, and my faith in that, your faith in that, is possible to make me clean of my sin and righteous before God, and in that faith, I can know him and be in relationship with him. If that's true, that good news demands to be told. It demands to be proclaimed. It can't be something that I just say, oh, I believe this, but I don't really ever talk about it. You know, I kind of keep it hid that I believe it. If I believe that that's true and it's the answer and hope for me, for life and peace, and it's the answer and hope for you, and it's the answer and hope for the whole planet, then I can't keep that quiet. You know, in Romans chapter 1, I love the way that Paul says this. I mean, I am not ashamed of this good news. I'm not ashamed of this truth. For it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed, beginning and ending, from faith to faith. As it is written from Habakkuk, the righteous shall live by faith. That this righteousness is possible from God by faith. And that this good news is the very power of God. And I'm not ashamed of it. In fact, I can't stop talking about it. And I believe that it's powerful, that it can't be stopped. There's this poet that I listened to a few years ago, and he talks about this and says, you know, the gospel is like a lion. You don't have to really help it out. You just have to unlock the cage and unleash it. That's what I believe about truth. And I think that's what Paul's talking about here with the gospel. It is the very power of God. It leaves no doubt. It just needs to be let out. And so I don't have to do any great sales job, or I don't have to beat anybody over the head with something. I can simply let the truth reveal itself and ask the questions that demand to be asked. The truth doesn't have to be argued or defended, just experienced. And, you know, this truth about who God is, I love the fact that I can be in a conversation, and I watched this guy that was helping me. The first time he took me to a college campus and he started to talk to somebody about Jesus, I got real scared. And I thought, man, this is making me uncomfortable, and I don't want to be at this table, and I don't want to be around this guy. And then I started to figure out that what he did was very different than what I had experienced in the past. Basically, he had this conversation where both people were offering up their questions about God and offering up the way that they understood things worked. And both sides, both he and the person that he was talking to, were offering up questions to one another, to try on these different beliefs and to see is there truth there? Because again, truth reveals itself. The power of God doesn't need any help. And so I kind of have always just taken that. You know, there is a lot of incredible truth. In fact, I was thinking about this morning. I've got this bracelet I've been wearing for a while now, and on it, you can't even hardly read it, but it says Asatoma Sadgamaya. And that's in the dialect of India, and what it's saying is, pursue truth. God, please take me to truth and away from untruth. And it's a part of a chant that's been said in India for a long, 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 long time. And that statement, that prayer, wouldn't you say that prayer as well? Oh, God, please lead me to truth and away from falsehood. And so in my personal devotion, this has just become a part of my prayer, my day in and day out. It's something that I want to ask for, that I would know the difference between truth and untruth, and that he would lead me to truth. And so I challenge you with that. If truth is something you buy and you don't sell, then you go looking for it and you ask all the questions. And so when it comes to this question of is God real, in Romans chapter 1, a little bit further on, it says, for the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world and the things that have been made, so that they are without excuse. So God has revealed himself. This intricate design of the universe points to a creator God. And the deeper you get into science, the deeper you get into whatever study you want to go after, the deeper you get, the more it reveals that there is this crazy intricate design and this insane amount of very detailed nature of creation. And it points to a creator. And he says he's revealed himself. It's interesting, all the things that it calls out, his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power, his divine nature. And it has been clear. It is there. It is plain, not complicated, to the point that he says, I mean, there's no excuse. And you could travel the world over, and people have noticed this. That's the reason why there's a natural tendency to worship something. Because you look at creation and you go, man, this didn't just happen. One of the things that happened with Jack, you know, we're driving through this crazy hustle and bustle of a city, and there's a cow right in the middle of the road. And he's not used to seeing cows in the middle of the road anywhere, much less in the middle of a big city. And so, you know, we had to talk about why is this cow in the middle of the road? And, you know, it's been a big, huge learning thing for me to get that these ancient cultures, a Native American culture, you go where you want to. I mean, this cow, for an ancient civilization, this cow provides milk. This cow provides dung that's used for heat, both to warm yourself, but also to cook your food. This cow is a provider of the things that the culture needs. You know, the river is also worshipped. And the river, you know, it provides water to the land to grow the crops that provide the food. And if you look at it, you go, yeah, this, it would be very easy to look to these things and to go, oh, these things are providing for me. These things are my God. And to miss the fact that there is a God that created those things, right? And so that's what he says here. This is the natural tendency that people move from. Man, it's clear, it's there, but they begin to suppress the truth and push it down. It goes on to say in verse 21, for although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. That would be the natural reaction. He's revealed himself. The reaction would be, man, to, yes, I want to worship this God. I want to honor him. I want to give thanks to him for all that he's done. But instead, they became futile in their thinking. Again, suppressing truth. And their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images that look like mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. This is another thing, probably the first time that Jack has ever seen an idol, a statue, that is there to represent something that I give my worship to. And this is what we do. Maybe you don't have a wooden statue or a metal statue in your house that you're giving worship to or that you're focusing your attention towards. But we give our attention to the things that we think provide for us. Maybe it's the worship of a job or a relationship or something beautiful that God, Creator God, has given to you. But instead of giving him the honor, instead of giving him the thanks, you've begun to worship the thing that you can see, that you can touch, that you can feel, that you begin to forget that he's the one that provided it. Truth is, this incredible God has revealed himself and wants to be known, but we're real quick to just reduce it to idols and not to worship him in all that he is. You know, I don't know what that is about us. I don't know if it's just too big to get our mind around, this element of faith, you know, that we can't fully get in. So there's this distance between what we know and what's plain to us and what is unknown. And so that distance, that faith that it requires is really difficult. You know, sometimes I think when the tough things of life come, I know this has been true for us. I mean, the tough things make me stop and go, is he really involved? Is he really even there? You know? When is he going to show up? Or where did he go? Which is interesting, really, because from the perspective of now being a parent, I know that I have a tendency and a desire to protect them, my children, from every possible bad thing that could happen to them and every hardship and everything. I don't want to have any scrapes or bruises. I don't want them to have to get their feelings hurt. I don't want any of the tough stuff. I want all the easy stuff. And at the same time, you and I both know that a life with no bumps and bruises, a life with no tough stuff, results in a very weak person. That it is the tough stuff that grows them. It is the difficult things that make them strong. And when it comes to faith and believing in this big God, it is the hardest times. I bet we could share stories this morning. I look back at the hardest times and coming through those. Those are the moments that that faith muscle for us, for me, that's when it grew. If you look at Hebrews, the chapter about faith, chapter 11, you know, it says this, and without faith, it is impossible to please him. For whoever would draw near to God must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who seek him. Right? He loves faith. Our faith in him is the thing that God, it makes him happy. It pleases him. The thing that we can't necessarily see, the thing that we can't put together on a spreadsheet. For whoever would do that, though, would draw near to him, must believe that he's real. And not only that he's real, but that he's actively involved and he rewards those who seek him. He's not distant. You know, this chapter, it's interesting talking about the tough stuff because it gives a list of all these different people, Noah and Abraham and Sarah and Enoch, and it's all these different people of faith. And it has this statement in there where it says, you know, they died not having seen the end of their faith. It's hard circumstance after hard circumstance, tough decisions that they made believing that God was real in the face. I mean, I can't even imagine what it would be like to be Noah. Anytime I try to put my mind, I'm supposed to build this boat, you know, and everybody thinks I'm crazy. I'm not sure, so sure I'm not crazy. I mean, how many days do you wake up and go, man, I'm going to do this again today? This crazy thing that doesn't make any sense because I believe, and then get to the end of it and not really ever see the end of that. And yet, these are the moments that these people, made God really happy in the way that they believed and took action to their faith. And so I guess that's the question this morning. When you look at your life, does your life reveal a person that believes that God exists? And that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. You know? I told this story to Jack many times before, and I don't think he really knew how big the monkeys are up in this hill place that we went, but they're not little monkeys. They're like, you know, up this tall, big monkeys. And so there's this story that he's heard me tell about going up to this Chardukon from the place that we were staying with his older brothers. And at Chardukon, I got some mango juice boxes and some crackers, gave him some snacks, and we were making our way back down the trail from the stores. And on the trail, a monkey met us. And I'm talking about this big, ugly monkey. And he looked at me and he's, you know, made his teeth, which is, you know, let me know I'm coming after you. Be scared of me. But I was looking at him like, all right, we're fine. You know, they're behind me. I'm between them and the monkey. He's going to end up going away. I just need to stare him back down. But then I saw him go like this and kind of glance over to the side. Like, oh no. I looked over and there was another monkey over here. And so the two of them had a plan. I don't know if they were just hanging out, waiting for somebody to come down the trail. I don't know how thought out their plan was, but they were definitely about to get my attention and then get the boxes from the boys. And I had to make a decision which one of those monkeys I was going to go after. I couldn't go after both of them. My point is, I promise there's a point, is that instead of just being on the roundabout of faith, not willing to really make a decision and go for it, to follow him with your whole heart, to make known his gospel, with everybody that you know, an all-in kind of thing. Instead of just being on the roundabout and not really choosing and just standing there and indecision. Man, I'm going to challenge us as we walk through this Easter to choose the monkey of faith and to charge it. You know, go all in. And that's what happened. I charged this one monkey and the other one ran away. But I had to make a decision. And I think that truth is found in those moments that we do. We don't just continue to pretend like two things can coexist. There is a God. He is real. He wants to know us and even went through all the trouble to send his son to live and to die and to be raised again so that we could be made clean. He loves us that much, that kind of love. God so loved the world that big. That, y'all, demands a response. And not just a half-hearted one. An all-in kind of response. You know, I had a friend one time that I was sharing these things with that looked at me and said, man, I think you actually believe this stuff. Which I thought, you know what? You could have talked to me a few years ago and maybe said the opposite. I'm not so sure you really believe it. If I spent some time with you, would I walk away say, man, I think this person actually believes this stuff is real. Not just a Sunday activity, but that it's real. You know, earlier in Hebrews chapter 11, it says that faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. It's going to require some faith, even though we can't put all the pieces together. But, man, in that moment of believing big and following wholeheartedly, our God meets us there. We have to believe that he exists, that he wants to and loves to reward those who earnestly seek him. Let me pray that we would. Father, I am just convicted that it is easy to get distracted or to suppress the truth because some of these truths require things from me that may be uncomfortable. And so it's easy for me to suppress it, to dumb it down to something that's very manageable for me instead of letting the truth that you exist, that you reward those that earnestly seek you, letting that be huge in my life, honoring you, giving thanks to you, not bringing you down, but in truth worshiping you and following you as you really deserve, proclaiming you as you would with something that's this good of news. So, Father, I pray that these days, these weeks building up to Easter, that this would be a special time where we pull back all the fog and all the clutter, and we look at you in truth, and we respond appropriately to your glory. Amen.
Thanks again for joining us on our sermon podcast, and you can learn more about us at thegrovechurch.org. And if you go to thegrovechurch.org/connect, there's a form you could fill out. Just let us know that you've been listening. And if you want to dig deeper on some of these topics that we cover in our sermon podcast or just in other issues of dealing with culture or theology, those kinds of things, you can check out our Cultivate podcast, which is on the same feed, however you found this particular podcast. So again, this is Charlie, the lead pastor at The Grove, and thank you so much for joining us.